Good evening. It's good to see everybody out here tonight. I want to apologize on the lessons that were for tonight. I had accidentally put lesson 3, even though it's lesson 6. So if that deterred you from picking up a lesson and you don't know what we're talking about tonight, that's my fault. I apologize. Although I did have at least one person email me to ask me about it, and so I'm sure the rest of you could have done that too as well if you didn't get a lesson. But tonight, if you want to go ahead and turn to Mark chapter 5, that's where we're going to be spending pretty much all of our time. We've been studying Christ-like conversations, and really, maybe that's not the best name for it. We kind of struggled just to talk about, are we going to call it evangelizing like Jesus, or really it's almost just Christ-like interactions. How did Christ interact with people in different ways, people of different backgrounds, and why did we say that we wanted to look at these things? All new students. None of you have been in a class before, right? Why would we care to study the interactions of Christ with those that He spoke to on a daily basis? So we can try to be more like Him. Specifically how, though? I put you on the spot. Okay, follow His example. But how? How? Those are broad. Well, let's narrow it down some. How we speak, like our speech with others. In particular, how we speak to other people about what? About the gospel, right? And our desire to be a part of bringing souls to the Lord, right? That's one of the reasons that we're still here on this earth. God has given us a task to go out into the world and to teach the gospel and to make disciples of all nations. That is our responsibility. Everybody who wears the name of Christian has a responsibility to do that. So when we are looking at the things that Christ does, we want to be like Christ in how He evangelized, in how He taught those that He met on a day-to-day basis. Because if you want to talk about somebody that was all that they were about, Jesus is the person to look to. Also, we know that Jesus is not only the King, not only the Savior, but He's the Master. Right? He is the one that wrote the book on how to evangelize. And so because He is the example, we are going to study His example so that we can follow His example. Now, we've already seen that there's things that He does that we're not capable of doing. He's like knowing the hearts of men, just looking at them. But there are a lot of things that He does that we can do, that we can be a part of as we work to evangelize to people on a day-to-day basis. And I think that it should be our goal to not just evangelize, but to do the best that we can. To find ways that we can reach more of the lost, recognizing that it's not our own abilities that cause change, it's the Word of God, but if God has given you a task, why not do it to the best of your ability? And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to continue to study and to see how we can better ourselves as going out into the world and evangelizing to those that are around us. And as we go through this class, I'm not telling you this is what you need to do to go to evangelize. I'm pressing on myself what I need to do to change as someone who should be evangelizing each and every day. And I'm hoping that together we can learn how to do a better job of it. Tonight the lesson is Jesus and the Messed Up. And I know that sounds messed up, but I hope that when you see what we're looking at, you'll see just what we mean by Jesus and the Messed Up. And coming out of Mark chapter 5, we'll begin really just by going ahead and reading the story, beginning here in verse 1. And I'm just going to go ahead and read it all the way through so that we're all on the same page, especially since I messed up the lessons, so that we make sure that everybody understands where we're at to begin. So Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, and I'm reading from the New American Standard. It says, "They," and that "they" is Jesus and the disciples, "who have left one side of Galilee," and it says, "they came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes. When he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him, and he had his dwelling among the tombs. No one was able to bind him, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, day and night, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. Seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. And shouting with a loud voice, he said, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus? Son of the Most High God, I implore you by God, do not torment me." For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he began to implore him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. The demons implored him, saying, "Send us into the swine so that we may enter them." Jesus gave them permission, and coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. Their herdsmen ran away and reported in the city what had happened in the country, and the people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed, sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind, the very man who had had the legion, and they became frightened. Those who had seen it described to them how it had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine, and they began to implore him to leave their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was imploring him that he might accompany him. And he did not let him, but he said to him, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed. Okay, so maybe this is most popularly known as the story about Legion, right? Maybe even some of the greatest detail that we have about a demon-possessed person. Mark is kind of full of descriptions and examples of those who have been demon-possessed. In order to kind of maybe see a little bit more about how we're going to interact with somebody that's like this, because we're not going to meet a demon-possessed person today, but we are going to meet people that are messed up, that in this life, I don't want to go too far with that because I want you to tell me some of these things. First, let's look at what do we know about the life of this man in Mark 5? What details do we have about how he lived his daily life and the things that he was accustomed to doing? Okay, he lived in the tombs. What's in the tombs? Dead bones. He lived with dead people every day. Right? That's messed up. That's not normal. Right? What else did he do? Or what? How do we see him? Okay, people were afraid of him, right? I can imagine, like, don't go beyond this, you know, telling your kids, don't go beyond this because we know Legion, you know, he might come this far. And he was a pest to those around. Everybody knew about him. We see that at the end. They understand who is sitting there with Jesus, right? Okay, what else? That's right. They shackled him, and so this is superhuman, right? This is beyond the physical that we see here. But you couldn't tell him to sit down. You couldn't even shackle him down. He was just so out of control, so unruly, so crazy. You could not stop this. What else do we see about him? What would Jesus probably have seen first when he ran up? He didn't have clothes on, right? Since Adam and Eve ate of the tree, men understood I should put clothes on. That's just how it is. An understanding of shame. He did not have that, right? What else about his physical appearance? He cuts himself, right? So probably the remnants of dried blood and maybe even scars or maybe even open wounds from where he had armed himself in that way, right? with stones, right? Jagged, I mean, just tearing flesh, right? This is completely messed up. Everybody who saw this understood that this was messed up, right? Anything else? What other things might we note? There's always this kind of not exactly sure the complete, you know, symbiotic relationship that you have there. You can't call it symbiotic because it's not. But the relationship of like the host and the parasite in demon possession. I can imagine that the man hurt. We see screaming, and we'll look a little bit more at that in just a bit, about kind of the reaction of the man to Jesus, and we're going to jump just to a couple of other spots to see what happens when the demon is taken out of a man in those as well. But there is just, the picture is, nobody would have gotten anywhere close to this man just at the sight of him. But everybody knew who he was, and so they knew not only how he looked, but how he acted. Mm-hmm. That's very good. At some point, he wasn't like this, right? But probably because of the way that he had become, they were gone. They could not help him. There was no part with him. And so he was in a different place, living amongst the tombs, amongst dead people, right? We're going to talk more about this in just a bit, but when Jesus says, basically asks him, "Who are you?" What does he say? "I'm Legion." That's his identity. I don't know what his name is. His identity, how he identified himself, was, "I am Legion, for we are many. I have embraced that this is what I am. I am completely consumed by this." So I want to turn from there and think about how we might meet somebody, not that's demon-possessed, but that is messed up like this. And I don't mean to offend anybody. I hope we can, you know, in your answers, you need to be kind about what you say. Because we can honestly say, when we're looking at anybody who is without Christ, they're messed up. But this is somebody who's made their identity a messed up life, right? So let's think about this. Who might we meet that is this kind of messed up today?
Satanist.
Okay, a Satanist, right? And I'm going to go ahead and say anybody that has gone to maybe a cult worship type mentality, that they have been completely subdued by that kind of, I want to say, deviant lifestyle, right? And that position that they take. So Ben and I talked about this, like what all we might put into this category. Like I said, you could go so very far, but even to the point of maybe being brainwashed, that this is who I am. You can't tell me anything different. You completely leave your family. There's nothing. I will have nothing to do with you because I am some kind of anarchist. You know, whatever. So, anyways, let's move past that. What else? What other types of people? What might we meet that we would see as this? Okay, alcoholics, right? And I would say, if we're going to look at it like we look at Legion, it's partly an alcoholic, because today everybody says, well, they drink, you know, and maybe they drink a lot. So what? He likes to have fun. If I'm looking at it from Legion's perspective, where everybody knows that person's messed up, maybe it's an alcoholic who has lost his job or her job, lost their family, maybe even lost their home. And if you say, well, what happened? I'm an alcoholic, right? That's what defines me. That's who I am. That's my identity, right? What else? Drug addict, right? And that's probably one that comes to mind a lot because of the way that drugs, alcohol as well, just consumes, right? And it becomes an identity. It becomes, I cannot survive without this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could not hold a conversation with that person, right? Because they are, I mean, exactly, right? Have been beaten down so much. Maybe it's by a family relationship that they had. No mother, no father, or abusive relationship, abusive parents, and it's just completely destroyed them to the point that they cannot function in society at all. And I'm talking about from a purely, you know, citizen level position, cannot function in society, right? And because of that, just the destructive nature of that person, right? What else? Okay. That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, I think that falls into that. Just mentally have gone outside of what we understand in this world is acceptable, and have taken it to the next level. I cannot connect with anybody in this life in the way that I should. Therefore, I go and I do something. What else? Okay. Right. Right, that's something that maybe you don't. You say, who does that? That they cut themselves, that they inflict pain in order to cope with life. I'll throw one out there. What about sexual deviant? Right, that has consumed a person's life to push it to the extreme. What else? Okay, so someone that has just completely abandoned the idea that God can exist, that there can be a God, that there is something that is going to somehow tell me what to do in this life. So I agree with you 100%. I'm thinking about this more from, I hate to say this, from the perspective of like the entire world sees this, like sees and says, oh, that's not acceptable, that's not okay. Like I said, I agree with you 100%, because to me, that's my definition of messed up, life without God. And that's what we see is the issue here. But even to take it to the point of even those that don't care anything about God, they can see, okay, that's just wrong. That's messed up. That's a life that's completely out of control, right? Atheism is making yourself your own God, right? Which is messed up life. What else? What else there? Okay. So I would say that's maybe a little bit of a different kind of messed up, right? It's just a function of body, right? Here we're talking more about in the spiritual aspect of it, right? How can we see that materialize in people's lives to the extreme? Yes. Okay. Yeah, these all three good things definitely fit within these. I wanted you to see that when you like start out and you go, well, nobody is like Legion. I mean, that's just messed up. But we just popped off probably 20 different, people that would just be in different stages of their life that had chosen to do different things that were just completely destructive, that are just completely messed up. And it's not uncommon. And in fact, I think if we take that perspective, we're going to lose any opportunity to evangelize to somebody that we meet or to make an effort to evangelize and to meet somebody that needs Christ, that needs the gospel, right? So what I want to do is I want to look at the things that Jesus did with Legion, right? Because there's not a lot of dialogue here, right? I'm not going to learn some, Sermon on the Mount, how to go about taking somebody through God's will, particularly from Legion. What I'm going to learn a little bit more is how I'm supposed to interact with somebody that is messed up, and where I need to grow in those aspects, right? Because this is not comfortable, right? In fact, he went to a place that was not comfortable, right? Where does he go? Where does it say? He went across the sea to where? Okay, Gennesaret, or the company, the country of the Gerasenes. It's going to be the east side of Galilee. It's not 100% sure where they could pinpoint that city, but there are multiple cities that it could have had his name derived from in that area. But what do you know about that city just from the context? What were they farming? Pigs. Would the Jews have been there farming pigs? No, pigs were unclean. Right? This is pretty well known that this would not have been a large Jewish population in this area. It's actually close to it's actually part of the area, most likely, called Decapolis, which is 10 cities there, and not known for its large Jewish population. And just in this story here, where we see him getting off the boat, he's in the company of pig farmers, right? So Jesus had made the decision to go from one side of the sea to the other side of the sea, even though the other side of the sea was not a place that he would feel most comfortable. Where are we going to go to meet people that are messed up?
Inner city.
Inner city, right? I think in Atlanta we know that we could find people downtown that had lost their lives to things that consumed them in this world. Yeah, any city. I agree with that. I do. I would also say that having gone into Atlanta, I'm going to be more likely to be able to be a larger amount of people that have congregated there, because that is the life that they have lived, right? And so what I'm trying to say is I don't need to be afraid to go there because I think messed up people are going to be there. But I agree with you 100%. These things have bitten people and destroyed people in every place, in every position, with every kind of look, make, color, status, all those things. And when we come across those, we can't be afraid because of the fact that we recognize that. But at the same time, we shouldn't hear something about a place and go, I'm not going to go there. There's a bunch of messed up people there. Right? So if I know that there might be a large group of people that have lives that have been just destroyed by their identity that they have chosen in a consumable thing in this life, you know, drugs or money or sex or whatever it may be, and I say, I'm not going there because that's where people are that I'm not comfortable around, then we're not evangelizing like Jesus. They need it, right? And they need it no less than my neighbor who makes whatever he makes. You know, maybe he makes $80,000 a year and drives a nice car and has a nice house and has two pretty kids and he needs it no less, or she needs it no less than that person does. And the fact that I'm uncomfortable there should not stop me from extending the gospel to that person. Right? Jesus actually went all the way across the sea to a place where he was going to meet people that he was not comfortable around. Now, I'm saying he might have been uncomfortable with. I don't think Jesus was uncomfortable around anybody because he just had one message. And I would love to get to that point, but I can tell you right now I'm not. I'm not, because I have trouble identifying with people that are different from me. And to talk to them and know where to start, because I got to figure out about that life. But that's what I need to do. That's what I need to know. Right? Can you imagine? So it doesn't say anything about the disciples in this. Can you imagine when you step off the boat, and this man, what does it say that Jesus saw the man and approached him? What happened? He ran to him. you get off the boat, and this man who is naked and covered in dry blood, and I don't know how he's acting or moving, being demon-possessed, but he's running at you as you enter this city that you are uncomfortable with. Right? I mean, if I was one of the disciples, I'd be like, here you go, Jesus. You know, I know you can handle this, but I'm standing behind you. Right? Jesus could have said, hey, let's get back on the boat. This is not the place for us. This is not where we need to be. I can imagine being very scared. Very scared in this situation. I mean, am I the only one? I don't think so. I almost said I hope not, but maybe I hope I am the only one. Maybe all you would just say, hey, we need to teach this guy the gospel. But you can see how we can be afraid, because I don't understand this person. I have no idea where they're coming from. And not only that, but just things about the way they act or the way they look, it scares me. It's hard for me to deal with that because I don't know them. I don't know what they're going to do, right? Jesus didn't say, let's get back on the boat, or he didn't say, you stay here, we're going around. We're going over here because I got some people over here I want to teach, but you know, you kind of make us afraid a little bit. Jesus doesn't do that, right? He doesn't flee. There should be nothing. I mean, I'm sure you've probably read testimonials of people that are in prison for capital murder, not only that, but multiple murders, that obeyed the gospel, that understood that their position before Christ was not acceptable, and the only way that they were going to receive eternal life was to accept Him and to obey the gospel. There is nothing that should cause us to say, I can't teach that person the gospel. It scares me. I'm afraid to do this. Now, I'm going to say, I struggle. I have a comfort zone that I live in, and it's hard for me to step out of that. And I'm trying to do better, I hope you will as well, to look at people and see them not so much as that person just messed up, but that person's lost. Just like I was lost, that person needs the gospel, just like I did. Okay? So there shouldn't be something that causes us to be so afraid that this uncomfortable situation stops us from teaching the gospel. It didn't stop Christ, and it hopefully won't stop us as well. Any thoughts to this point? Close to 8 o'clock. Jesus finds out his identity and is determined to use God's power to change it, right? Use his power to change it, I guess, probably say. All right, we've already talked about this a little bit. He says, I am legion. This is who I am. This is who I've become. It has caused me to become a person that lives in the tombs, that does not wear clothes, that cuts myself, that cannot be contained by anyone. This is who I am. And Jesus doesn't say, well, that's your decision. So if that's who you want to be, you go ahead. We're going to go to the other people over here. Jesus, now, I don't want to be too dogmatic about some of this stuff, because we're talking about something that we don't fully understand as far as the demon possession is concerned, and the fact that Christ uses this to show his power and authority over the supernatural as well. But Jesus hears his identity, but he doesn't accept that that's his identity. He doesn't leave it at, okay, you are legion, that's who you are, go be legion. Just do it as best you can, go be legion. That's not what he does. He doesn't leave this here. And I use the word to transform his identity. When I was thinking about the miracles that Christ did, all the miracles that he does have some kind of transformation. And you can tell me the one that are like five that don't after this. But, I mean, you think like, well, he turns water to wine. He transforms it, right? You think about those that are sick that he makes well. He transforms it. Those that are dead that he made alive. He transformed them. Now, all of those started with something that they should not be and were turned into something that they should be. Or something that they weren't and turned them into something that they are. They needed to be, right? So here we have a man who's demon-possessed, whose identity is just havoc, is a lost life. Even though he's alive, he is lost completely. And Jesus says, I realize that you say that's your identity, but by God's power, that can be transformed. And sometimes I think we think I'm just not strong enough to teach this person the gospel. Or that person just is not going to listen enough for me to teach them the gospel. Or that person doesn't care anything about the gospel. And yet Jesus took a man who wouldn't sit down, who didn't wear clothes, who cut himself with stones, who called himself Legion, and he said, this is power that can transform this person. Right? Sometimes we think that we're the one doing it, that we have to be up to this kind of standard, and then we'll all of a sudden start winning a higher percentage of souls over to Jesus. That's not how it works. The gospel and the power of God is capable of changing anyone. We mentioned those that were on death row because of crimes that they committed who accepted Christ. There is no soul that the power of the gospel is not strong enough to reach. Right? Thoughts or comments? You guys being real quiet. Maybe you just completely disagree with everything that I'm saying. You can raise your hand and speak out about that as well if you'd like. Okay. So this is where we're going to go to a couple other spots. Jesus takes this demon out of this man, and it doesn't mention it here, but it mentions it in almost like every other example of a demon being removed from a person. Right? In chapter 1, in verse 26, it says, when Jesus rebukes him, says, be quiet, come out of him, telling the demon to come out. Verse 26 says, throwing him into convulsions, the unclean spirit cried out with a loud voice and came out of him. In chapter 9, verse 26, we see a boy who is demon-possessed and wasn't mute, but it says that when Jesus commands him to come out, in verse 26, after crying out and throwing him into terrible convulsions, it came out, and the boy became so much like a corpse that most of them said he is dead. Having a demon come out of a person, from what we see here, seems to be a very kind of vicious thing. It's something that is completely latched on to that host, and Christ is tearing it away. Right? It's going to be something that's not easy when we meet somebody that has a life that is messed up. Because remember, we said that identity is one thing, and all of a sudden that identity has to become something completely else. I am a servant of Christ. From I do whatever I want, and I consume myself with things that make me feel good, that please myself. That's tearing out of a person what they desire to be, what they have been so accustomed to, what they have grown comfortable with. And so we must understand that if we're going to go to those that are messed up, that it's not just going to be doves fluttering and pretty music in the background kind of scene. It's going to be difficult. There are going to be things that have to be removed from a person's life that may even have serious physical consequences. Right? Someone who is severely addicted to drugs cannot just say, boom, I'm just going to stop using them. But if they decide that they want to accept Christ and they want to change, they're going to have to go through a very difficult physical process to become able to live without those drugs. That's difficult. And that's something that if we want to bring Christ to those that are struggling with these kinds of things, we need to be ready to be a part of. To be a strength, to be a hand, to be a help in those times. And I know men that have done this very well for many years, that have been great examples to me. And they're a rock for those that are struggling with the difficulties that are going on in their life, that have changed their identity to say, no, I want to be like Christ. I don't want to be focused on what this life has to offer. Okay, I'm going to open it up again so you might have thoughts or comments.
Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think, for the example of Christ, his teaching, you've got to always put that on
Yeah. You see the difficulty that they live with, and just like Christ that we've seen multiple times, where he just has compassion for the person. The leper in chapter 1, just to see the state that they're in and recognize what they need and to have compassion and love for that person. And I think, like you said, even more so when we understand we've been lost and Christ found us, right? And there were those that probably helped us along the way. And we need to be that to others as well. I think, Den, did you have your hand up? Yeah. What the scriptures teach, right? As a person, you know, I'm not going to be involved in the things of this world that are not acceptable to Christ, right? And that are not acceptable according to His Word. But I have no reason not to evangelize to any person that has that need. And you know, if I'm not comfortable with necessarily some, you know, physical aspect, where we're meeting, or, you know, like something that I don't think is right, like I would be sinning if I did that, I'm not going to take part in that. But that's not really going to stop me from being able to evangelize to those people, right? Well, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more later. But yeah, there's definitely opportunity to teach in those aspects. That's right. And you know, we're reading this example here of Christ, in which in the end it's great, right? Next week we're going to study the rich young ruler, which on the face has all these really good looking things, and in the end it's terrible, right? So even Christ had opportunities that didn't work out perfectly, but he understood that going in, and he understood that the strength wasn't in other people, but it was in God. And we're going to deal with those difficulties at times, and like you said, Ted, even that they might try and use you in these kind of, when somebody's had an identity that's this consuming, to think that it's not going to try and pull them back in, that Satan's not going to try and reach back in and get them again, is foolishness. We need to be prepared, knowing that that's a possibility. Yeah, we're trying to do things that are going to best allow us to evangelize in each of those opportunities. That's right. Okay, I'm going to move forward because I do have just a few more, but I do appreciate the comments. Thank you. Thank you for bringing those out. So what Legion becomes is the opposite of what he was, and I want to look at this just a little bit deeper. In verse 7, we see him telling Jesus, like, I don't want to have anything to do with you. Like, I implore you, by God, do not torment me. Like, what do we have to do with each other? And then, afterwards, we see in verse 15, and then of course we know all the things about what he was, his actions. In verse 15 it says, they came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind, the very man who had had the legion. So those things that are mentioned there are complete opposites of what he was. Right? You didn't see legion sitting down. You didn't see him with clothes on. You didn't see him in his right mind. But Christ desired to change that identity and to turn him into something that was the opposite. That's what repentance is. Repentance is not, I'm just going to stop doing these things, but I'm going to just back my back up really close against them. Repentance is, I'm not going to do these things, and I'm also going to walk away from these things. I'm going to put those things as far away from me as possible. Right? It is a change. It is a complete opposite. We even see him sitting there with Jesus, right? If you think about a master and a student sitting at the foot of the master, that he was sitting there in his right mind. And even at the end, it says that he begs Jesus, let me come with you. I want to have a part with you in what you're doing, right? That is the change. That's the change that Jesus offers, is to desire better things. It's to have better things and to be a part of those better things. Jesus doesn't win the popularity contest, right? When you are willing to reach out to people that the whole world sees as messed up, it might not be popular. People might ridicule you or make fun of you or say they're just going to use you, or why are you wasting your life doing this? Or maybe even say, I thought you were a different person. I don't really want to be around you. And that may not just be people of the world. That may be people that are claiming to be servants of Christ, because it's difficult, because it's not easy, and because it is not normal. But it is the opportunity to evangelize to the lost. And so we must recognize that we may not, on the back end, come out really popular, right? What did the people of the city ask him to do? Leave. I think a couple of people may have mentioned different reasons why he might have said this, but it says that they saw him clothed and in his right mind, and they knew what he was before, and that terrified them. Right? They were scared of Jesus because of that. Right? Jesus didn't care what they thought about him. And he didn't stop and go, wait. You need me. Just like he needed me. You needed me. He leads. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great comparison there to see, you know, Gomer, people would have understood, hey, wait, she's a prostitute. Why are you marrying her? Why are you taking her in? Why are you clothing her? And then she's going off to these other men. That's very good. I haven't thought about that before. We see that it's not a popularity contest. It's not something that we're going to come out somehow just better on the other side as far as this world's needs or goods are concerned because of the action we're taking. We're taking these actions because God has commanded us to go into the world and to make disciples of all nations. And we see the lost. And we see that we were lost. And we see that He sought us and found us. Jesus went all the way across the sea. He got one guy. He only got one guy that listened to him. The rest of the people just said, leave. Christ went all the way across, which is, you know, this is a couple thousand years ago. Not quite the journey that it might be today. And even today, it's not the easiest thing in the world because of the storms and things that come up on the Sea of Galilee. But Jesus went all the way across and he reached one soul. Now, what are we willing to do? What are we willing to do? I need to work on this. And I can't just say it, I have to do it. I need to work on this. So, last thing, right as the bell is ringing, by the power of the gospel, changed people change people. And this is Ben's line, so I can't take credit for it. But this man, who was previously known as Legion, goes out and tells everybody about what the Lord did for him. And everybody is amazed. And just to connect, when Jesus comes back to Decapolis later, And I don't know exactly how much these things coincide, but there's a large group of people that want to meet him. And there's only one man that believed in Jesus when he left and went back across the sea. I'm sure word could have traveled or whatever. But this man did his job. He said, just like Christ sought me and found me, I realize that there are others that don't know about Jesus. Hey, I need to go tell them about Jesus. I need to tell them what he's done for me. And so change people. That's what we are. We are people that have been changed by the Word of God. The gospel is powerful to do that to not only us, but to anybody that we come into contact with. Thank you for your comments. Our time is up. The next lesson is on one of the chairs back there in the foyer, so please pick that up if you can, and we'll be in Mark 10 for the most part on Sunday. Thank you.